John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline, John Boyle from Seahawks.com. And so it was a wild 3 days league-wide. A strange 3 days for the Seahawks in the national sense, because it seems like just about everybody ripped them. But, I mean, how do you go back to 2011 when I think Mel Kiper gave the draft a D plus and then had to come back later and gave it a B plus. I think it was a D plus to a B plus after kind of reviewing the draft. And, you know, knowing that there's going to be certain type of players that Pete Carroll and John Snyder that are looking for, and they may not fit the national interest. Is it kind of a relive of the 2011 draft?
It does feel kind of like those early years, you know, 11 and 12, where the national folks don't really get what they're doing and kind of pan the draft. And, hey, maybe that's a good sign, because those have been some of their best drafts. So, yeah, I mean, we've known all along they do things their own way. They have a pretty specific type of player they like. And, you know, that's both physically and just the makeup of a guy, you know, mentally and his personality and all that. And, yeah, I mean, they are thrilled about this group.
Yeah, and you can just see from Pete and John how happy they were with the whole group. And, you know, you could see as the draft was going on, they were checking the boxes of the needs that they have. And, like, I don't know, did you see USA Today this morning? They gave the Seahawks the 32nd best draft and gave it a D and said, I don't understand why they didn't draft draft offensive line and cornerbacks. That's their biggest need. Well, they drafted a cornerback. He just happened to be listed as a safety because that's what he played in college, but they're converting him to cornerback and Trey Flowers. And then on the offensive line, invested so much in the offensive line for 2 years, you've got to start taking care of the other positions.
Exactly. I mean, they, you know, I know people, that's the offensive line, some people point to and kind of want to take shots at, but they are pretty excited about the group they have coming back. As you said, they've invested a lot of early draft picks in recent years. They're bringing DJ Fluker in, and, you know, there's a chance for some continuity there they haven't had with potentially, you know, assuming Posick might win a starting job. That's four returning starters that you could put in there if that's how you choose to do it. So, yeah, I mean, they had other needs they wanted to address, and as always, sometimes it just comes down to, you know, a guy being too good to pass up at that position. But, yeah, I mean, the one thing, even though he went kind of late, Jamarco Jones is a guy, you know, with a lot of good tape. He was a starter for 2 years and, you know, one of the best schools in the country. So, you know, I don't think he's necessarily a guy who comes in and starts right away just because they've got some good options there, but he could be a pretty good player down the road.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I think that one was a very, very interesting pick that they made. I mean, obviously, Shaquem Griffin was the big story, so I think we don't have to say, gee, what was the biggest story of the draft? It was Shaquem Griffin. But, I mean, which guy kind of appeals to you, or two guys appealed to you the most to kind of capture your imagination?
You know, really, it's easy to point to their first two picks. I mean, they've talked about wanting to get the run game going. Pete Carroll talked at the owners' meetings about how important that is. And, yeah, you know, they just haven't been a very consistent quality running team the last 2 years like they want to be. And so, you know, when you talk about that and then you go out and draft a running back in the first round, that's, you know, putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak. And, you know, I guess maybe just I read too much of the pre-draft stuff, and so I just assumed Penny wasn't going to be the second running back taken. But when you start to just dig in and look at him and watch his highlights, you look at his numbers and just the combination of size and speed that he has, I mean, he looks like he could be a guy who comes in and makes a real impact right away. And then, you know, sticking with the running theme, getting Will Dissly, the guy they think is the best blocking tight end, that really fits there. But then Rasheem Green's a guy that, you know, a lot of people thought would go earlier. He did have some medical concerns with the knee, but he really fits. You know, when you talk about some needs, their defensive line's going to look a lot different. You know, we still don't know for sure about Cliff Averill, but Michael Bennett's gone. You know, they lost Sheldon Richardson, and Green's, you know, I'm not saying Green is coming in to be Michael Bennett, because that's not really fair to put on a rookie, but he does play, you know, a similar position-wise that he can be, you know, a defensive end in the base defense. They can slide him inside, be that interior pass rusher when they want to get more pass rush in the nickel. So, you know, he's a guy that could probably find some playing time right away.
Yeah, no question. What's your thoughts on trading up to get Michael Dixon, the punter?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to lie. I was pretty surprised. We haven't seen this regime draft a punter or a kicker. So to not only draft a punter but move up to do it, you know, I kind of was put off by that a little bit. The timing was a little hard, too, from a work perspective, because we're all scrambling to write about Shaquem Griffin, and they just made another pick, and then they trade up and make a third fifth-round pick all in quick succession. So it was kind of interesting to see. But then when you, again, you go and look at this guy, and he's clearly viewed as the best punter, you know, not just in this class, but maybe in several years. And, you know, just look at the Rams and Johnny Hecker. You see what a difference that type of punter. I mean, you know, not all punters are the same, but these guys who can really affect field position, 10 teams deep, that's a huge difference maker. So, you know, and to say, you know, maybe you look at a fifth round pick and say, oh, they got that guy early. But then we saw two more punters go in the fifth round. So that probably was about the time you had to make that move to get the best guy. So that's, you know, again, I was a little surprised initially, but he could be a real difference maker.
Well, I think when Oakland made the choice of a punter in the lower part of the fifth round, I think that shows you why John Snyder traded up, because I think, you know, either his reconnaissance or his, you know, looking at the needs with Marquette King being released, you know, I think he probably anticipated that that might be the case. And if he was going to go to get Dixon, he had to go get him, because Oakland picked maybe about three spots where it would have been below Seattle. So they had to trade above Oakland. So I'm sure that's what he was thinking in making that move.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, John's got Pete Carroll talks about this a lot, that, you know, John Schneider has a really good sense, you know, whether it's just kind of an intuition or the connections he has around the league, but he's very good at kind of reading how things are going to play out. I mean, the most famous example is a lot of people wanted to get Russell Wilson in the second round just to be safe, but they stuck to their conviction, thought they could get him in the third round, and that allowed him to only get an all-pro middle linebacker in the second round. So, you know, yeah, he's really good at understanding how things are going to play out, and he understood that there might be some teams looking for punters in around that area of the draft, and sure enough, they got pretty much the clear-cut number one guy of that group, and two more went not long after.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And then, of course, I don't know, what kind of read do you get on the quarterback taken in round seven?
You know, I'm not going to pretend that I knew a ton about this guy and had a great feel about him being the guy the Seahawks would draft. But, you know, just from what we've seen of him now that they picked him and look at him, he's a big athletic guy. And John Schneider talked specifically about his, you know, ability to be thrown on the run and be accurate when he's moving around, which is important in today's NFL. And, you know, no matter who the quarterback is, I think it's just telling that they went out and got one this draft, because John Schneider's talked in the past about it and very directly said he hasn't done a good enough job of drafting and developing quarterbacks just a week before the draft. So, you know, this is a chance. You know, he comes from Green Bay, where they were so famous for doing that in the 90s with picking guys under Brett Favre, developing them, and turning into pretty good trade chips if they don't play for you. So this is a chance for a young guy to come in and, you know, maybe be a guy that could develop to somebody valuable down the road.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, I guess the one thing that's pretty evident is that there's a good likelihood he'll end up being cut, but the fact that he's been here, they can get him back to the practice squad, and they'll spend enough time with him, but to have a chance then to really grow with him and then see where he's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, you don't draft a quarterback in the seventh round expecting to come in and make an immediate impact for you, but, you know, he'll get a chance to compete for the backup job. You know, the way things stand right now, he would certainly be in the running there, but yeah, at the very least, he's a guy you can have throughout the offseason, and if you want to put him on the practice squad, that's always an option too. So yeah, I think that this is just a chance to kind of get better, you know, get more competitive in that quarterback depth and get some guys in who can maybe develop.
Going to the Will Dissly selection, how do you see them kind of sorting out how they'll use their three tight ends, Ed Dixon, Nick Vanette, and Will Dissly?
Yeah, you know, it's probably going to be something we need to wait to see in training camp how that looks. But, you know, Dissly specifically, they talk so much about his blocking, and John Schneider even made the Zach Miller comparison. And that's something they've struggled to find, is that guy who can be the, you know, in part because there's just fewer of them in the league. It's, you know, obviously more of a passing game and more tight ends who are almost a big receiver than a true tight end. So, you know, he's going to be a guy they expect to block. But Ed Dixon's also been a pretty good blocker in his career. And, you know, I think what they want with both those guys and even Nick Vanette as well is maybe more tight ends who are versatile and kind of can do both. You know, as phenomenal as Jimmy Graham was as a pass catcher, he was, you know, not necessarily the best blocker. And sometimes teams kind of can get a feel for what you're doing depending on which personnel you have in there. If you have three tight ends who are all, you know, pretty legitimate blockers and pass catching threats, that gives you some flexibility.
Okay, well, I read a lot of good stuff here on Seahawks.com with John Boyle. John, thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Of course. Thanks for having me, John.
Okay, coming back next, we will try to take out the grade book. I mean, right now everybody's grading the Seahawks draft nationwide, and grades aren't coming in good. Grading what's going on with different things, good, bad, the indifferent. It's the John Clayton Show on 710.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show. And you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Report Card with the Professor.
And the Report Card is done each day at this time where we basically look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the stupid, the smart, all the crazy things, all the kind of unusual things that happen and put grades to them. And of course, with the draft, with the NBA playoffs, with baseball going on, we have plenty to look at and to grade. So let's go to the report card. And what do we have, Maura?
Well, John, you remember last week when we talked about how Tampa Bay was going to have Zsa Zsa the Parrot announce mm-hmm. their fourth round pick from their pirate ship? I think Zsa Zsa kind of had stage fright. Because here's the pick, and you can only kind of hear a little squawk in the background, and the lady that has the parrot on her shoulder has to do it all.
With the 117th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Jordan Whitehead, defensive back from Pittsburgh.
Yay! Isn't that awesome? I mean, you know,
a parrot choke.
Yeah, it's like all set to have it and just absolutely and completely choked. That is incredible. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, what do you think this is now going to do for parrots of the world in future drafts?
I don't think they'll be asked back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because what you wonder about is, like, can the parrot get the name right?
I don't know. It wasn't that hard.
That's the weird part about it. It wasn't that hard on the name. And so how could the parrot choke? And so I guess, you know, they wanted to try to get some different type of things in animal settings and all that stuff. And the parrot would be one of the few that could talk, but it choked. That's awful. So I have to give the parrot a big F, and I have to give the idea of using the parrot as an F. Because, one, it's unfair to ask the parrot to try to get a name right. And then, number two, the parrot was up there and was embarrassed.
Yeah. You should have heard Rich Eisen tossing to them. He was just like, I can't believe we're doing this right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was not about it from the beginning.
I can imagine.
Up next, did you see former Philadelphia kicker David Akers really let the Dallas fans have it when he went up there to announce their pick?
What's up, Dallas?
Kickers throwing the Cowboys.
That's like the ultimate diss. I mean, can you imagine Wyman listening to this? I mean, a kicker now dissing a whole city and a whole franchise.
Oh, yeah, Wyman hates kickers.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's like he wouldn't be able to tolerate that. But, I mean, for the bold kicker who was able to do that, I have to kind of give him a B+. I mean, he did a great job of dissing him. And then, you know, pointing out that they weren't even born the last time that any of these guys from the Cowboys went to the Super Bowl. I mean, that is a big-time shot.
Yeah, those Cowboy fans were booing pretty hard, but it was pretty entertaining.
So do you think that they booed him more than they did Roger Goodell?
I think so.
Yeah.
But Roger Goodell had more frequent boos, I think.
Yeah. Well,
he got to go up there and keep getting them.
Mm-hmm.
David Akers was a pretty good kicker, wasn't he?
He was a very good kicker. Yeah, very consistent, good strong leg. And, his voice sounded a little strange, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, he was screaming so loud. It sounded like he was trying to, you know, be a part of a WWE match or something.
Yeah, agreed. That was really wild. Kind of fun to see. It's interesting to go back-to-back in NFC East cities where the rivalry is so intense. I mean, what, Drew Pearson drawing the anger of the Philadelphia Eagle fans, and now you had so many Philadelphia players coming up and trying their best to knock down the Cowboys.
I love it.
I know.
I love that when the draft gets heated like that.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes for some fun. There's no question about it. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, and then they also had Nate Burleson go up there, and it took him a good 5 minutes to finally announce the draft pick. I don't know what he was doing.
What was he doing?
It just hamming it up. Uh-huh. Talking a lot. It was kind of weird. But I don't. We'll move on from the draft. And next up, I have some, of course, the instant analysis. Our friend Skip Bayless thinks the Browns should go ahead and start Baker Mayfield.
I believe he will not shrink under the pressure of living up to being the number one overall pick. And I believe the Cleveland Browns would turn into the surprise team of the National Football League. I could see them going 7-9. It's 5.5 is the over-under on how many games.
That's a 70% increase.
I don't know. 7-9. I definitely would see must-see TV because I'm going to watch every Browns game if Baker Mayfield starts from the start. I could see an offense that will at least rival Atlanta's for the most exciting bombs away offense in football. Because I'm going to tell you what Baker Mayfield does best. He speed reads defenses as he did at Oklahoma, and he can find the open weapon and hit the open weapon with deadly accurate passes.
Has Skip Bayless been right on any of the things that he says about football? I mean, you know, every time there's a Skip Bayless quote on something, because remember how he was big on Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow?
Yes.
Yeah, both of them. I mean, it's like, so now you want to take Baker Mayfield and start him now, and then they're going to go 7-9. So Skip, D-. I mean, because again, get a grasp of it. A rookie quarterback coming in, you don't have to rush him. I mean, do you want to do a Mitch Trubisky for the guy? I mean, again, they gave him like 6 games to kind of learn and wait, and then they put him in there, and he didn't do well. I mean, and now you want to put Baker Mayfield out there with the Browns, a team that's won 1 game in 2 years? Come on, man. D-.
Skip's always good for these crazy takes, but rivaling Atlanta's offense, I don't know.
I mean, come on.
And Atlanta only added, they got Calvin Ridley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Very strange.
Last up, switching to a sport we never talk about, but I kind of wanted to get the professor's take on this. Over the weekend, the World Surf League officially crowned Brazilian surfer Rodrigo Coxa the new record holder for the biggest wave ever surfed after he successfully rode an 80-foot wave off the coast of Portugal to take the previous record of 78 feet set in 2011.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. I guess you have to give him an A because, I mean, he's doing something. He's boldly gone where no one has gone before. And so, I mean, if you're able to do that, it's like you're riding the wave and you're doing it to it. You have to get an A, maybe even an A+. I mean, that has to be a good grade because that, I mean, think about how dangerous that is. An 80-foot wave. I mean, what was this, a tsunami?
Yeah, you have to wonder.
I mean, that's
Professor,
wild.
What are the chances you ever ride an 80-foot wave?
Let's put it this way. I'm the one that's going to be standing there at the 80-foot wave on the beach behind a protective surface and waving to the wave. My wave would be a right hand going back and forth and waving. That would be the only wave that I'm doing.
All right, that's it for grades today,
okay.
Professor.
Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next with the draft and everything, the NBA, baseball, 16-11 start. Lots of text questions, so text us at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And we are taking your text questions at 710-710 on a busy weekend that included the draft, including Game 7 for the Cleveland Cavaliers, 3 out of 4 taken by the Seattle Mariners over the Cleveland Indians. Lots of good stuff going on. Penguins winning a couple games in hockey. Gotta like that. All right, so text question 710-710. What do we got?
The 206 says, which Seahawks draft pick has the best chance of being on the team by the first game of the season?
Well, all of them.
Probably starting.
Or starting? I guess obviously Penny probably has the best chance to start. I still am not totally sold that they need to start him in week one. You still have Chris Carson. You can gradually work him in. And I think the fact that he's making that transition. So he obviously has the best chance. And I don't know, maybe other than, say, Michael Dixon, who's going to be, I think, the punter because they took him in the fifth round. I mean, if you want to consider him a starter. So those would be the two that would start. Most of the other guys are going to be in more backup special team roles, trying to at least get their feet on the ground.
509 says, Professor, how did you enjoy your time in the 710 Draft Lounge, and would you do it again next year?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, nice and relaxed. I mean, there was never a time where there was any blank air, because, I mean, we could just talk and talk and talk. And, you know, when you have four people that are passionate about football and sports and all that stuff, it was fun.
Yeah, I went over on Friday, and I must say, it was very good food, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They took care of us with the catering.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, I mean, we really didn't have enough time. I mean, I think Salk, like Salk was saying, hey, did Graz eat something on the air? And it's like, yeah, well, we were there for like 7 hours. I mean, Graz had to leave after 3. But again, it's like, it's a lounge. Can't you eat in a lounge?
Yeah, I hung out on Friday with Lydia and Salk and Brock and Stacy. Danny stopped by for a minute. Tom played his bass.
Oh, wow.
It was fun.
I know at one point Jim Moore ran up to the camera and tried to, like, scare people.
Brent got a screenshot of that, and it's pretty amazing. Just this super extreme close-up of Jim Moore's face.
Scary.
The 206 wants to know, Professor, who's the Hawks' third wide receiver this year?
I still wouldn't be surprised if Amara Darbo kind of emerges as the third receiver. I mean, he's now been there a year. He's been in the system. He's got talent. I know he made only about 9 catches next year, but I think he's the one. Again, it's either going to be him or Jaren Brown, who they signed in free agency.
The 509 wants to know, how did Hercules Mataafa not get drafted?
Probably because it was hard to figure out what position he is, because body-wise, he's kind of a tweener between safety and linebacker. And so I think that they looked at it, and they're trying to figure out, until that body gets a little bit bigger, where is he going to go. But in Minnesota, you know, they care so much about speed that they'll find a way to make that work.
206 says, I feel like I've heard a lot about our draft picks, except for Jacob Martin. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, I mean, just a kind of another one of the pass rushing types. He's got some good speed and angles and stuff, and got a little bit of a long shot, I mean, to try to do it. Because, again, the key was is trying to get as much depth as edge rusher. And so, he can do some of that, and he's got a pretty good list of sacks and pressures and that from college.
206 says, Professor, with the Titans taking Luke Falk, do you think he'll ever get to start in the league?
Hard to tell. I mean, because, again, he just needs time. I still look at him so much like Kirk Cousins. I was surprised to see he went all the way down to 199. Now, one of the stories I was hearing is that, he was having trouble with that wrist of his, and catching the ball, and I know it's such like that, when he was trying to, work with different people. And so I think that it may be a little bit of a hand-wrist injury that kind of got knocked down a little bit. But I think he's going to be a good quarterback, and given time, I still look at him as being kind of a Kirk Cousins type.
425 says, Professor, if John Ryan is cut, will he retire or find a job?
Well, he'll find a job. He's too good of a kicker not to find a job. So it's, I don't know what team he's going to go to. I kind of have to look at the list and see that. But no, he'll be kicking in this league. He's too good.
206 says, John, how would you grade your Pittsburgh Steelers on their draft?
I think pretty good. I mean, they got a safety to start off. I thought that was good. I thought they addressed the defense. They started to get some young guys on offense, particularly on the offensive line, and they need to do that because they are getting a little older and higher paid on the O-line. So, I kind of give them a nice B.
All right, the 206 says, do you feel more comfortable with the current starting O-line? Any comments as to why we might not have drafted O-line as a priority?
That's what I was saying before, because I think what happens is, I mean, they put so much on the offensive line. I mean, you don't want to overdo it, and you got to start taking care of the other positions. I mean, once they signed DJ Fluker, that took the urgency off. I'm not saying DJ Fluker is going to be the greatest player ever, but I thought that at least by taking him, now they've come back and they've addressed the need. And remember, I mean, they still have three young guys that are still there that are developing. I mean, they still have George Fant, who can maybe be a swing tackle. They've got Reese Odhiambo. They've got Joey Hunt. And so, I think that they did fine in that regard, and there was no need to go and overdo it on the offensive line. At least in getting Jamarco, they get a guy that can be maybe a tackle prospect. He's a good pass blocker. So, no, I think that they did it the right way.
509 says, what happened to last year's number one pick? Which would have been Myles Garrett?
Myles Garrett, I mean, last year's number one pick, fine. He had a pretty good year. I mean,
with Cleveland.
Yeah, we went with Cleveland. I mean, it's like he was on a 1-16 team. So it's like, or no 1-16 team. So, he was blighted by being on that bad boy. But again, I mean, he played pretty well. That's why I was still stunned that they didn't take Bradley Chubb and put Chubb on the other side of Garrett.
I mean, they don't necessarily I don't know what they're doing with Myles Garrett either. They played him really, really far back most of the year. So, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully they figure it out this year. The 360 wants to know, what undrafted free agents have the best chance to make the roster?
Too early to say. I want to take a look at them over in, when they come in over the weekend and kind of get a look and see. Again, you have to kind of sort out because, again, you don't know what signings and all that. I mean, you know, all of a sudden on Friday, you know, Byron Maxwell gets a deal done. And that, of course, I mean, or at least it was a Thursday or Friday. But, again, that took a little bit of pressure off the cornerback position. They didn't have to necessarily, you know, draft a cornerback as high because they were able to get Maxwell back. So too early to tell. We'll sort that out starting over the weekend.
360 wants to know who will have more playing time, J.D. McKissic or C.J. Procise?
I'd say right now J.D. McKissic because I think Procise may be the one to go. I think he may be the one that maybe they can get like a low-round draft choice in some kind of a trade. So I'd say right now McKissic makes it and very questionable as far as what's going to happen with Procise. Now, again, Procise got great talent, but when you look at the talent that he has, it's very similar to what you see from Penny. And so I think Procise is in a real tough spot.
509 says, Professor, the Shaquem Griffin pick is a great storyline and really cool to see. Is it a valuable pick, though?
I think so, yeah, because, again, when you have four picks in a round, you have the luxury of kind of taking a gamble. And, again, you're taking a gamble on somebody that's probably not a gamble. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was, you know, one of the best. He was the best defensive player in a conference. I mean, he's fast. He doesn't miss tackles. I mean, you don't have to rush him. He's going to be a weak side linebacker. You have KJ right ahead of him. And so you start him out on special teams and then see how it goes. If he gets an opportunity to play, then we'll see how good he can be.
509 wants to know how you would grade the Packers draft with their new GM.
I thought it was probably a B minus. I mean, I don't think they got enough at the pass rusher area. I mean, again, they continue to draft cornerbacks. I mean, they were drafted two cornerbacks, and that's kind of, you know, okay. But how many have they drafted now over the last, say, 4 or 5 years? But I think I'd give it a decent grade, but a B minus more so than a B plus.
206 wants to know if the Seahawks might look into JT Barrett, the undrafted quarterback.
I don't think so. No, I think that they've got enough now for quarterbacks because they've got four quarterbacks. I mean, I think what it was one point last year where they're kind of going through camp with only three. Don't forget they got Stephen Morris, who's been with five teams, hasn't played, hasn't thrown a pass in the league, but they do have him. So, no, I think that they're pretty well set at the quarterback position for the moment.
Yeah, it looks like they also picked up John Franklin III, who was on a Netflix show, I don't know if you saw, called Last Chance U, where kids that have maybe had some troubles off the field or some issues go and play with that team and then try to get back onto bigger schools. And So it looks like the Seahawks are working with one of those guys, John Franklin.
There you go.
We'll see what happens there.
Okay.
253 says, how are the Cowboys looking with the Jason Witten situation?
Well, they're able to get a tight end. I mean, I thought they really were solid in the draft. I mean, but when you now take Witten and Dez Bryant out of the lineup, it's going to make it tougher for Dak Prescott. So, but overall, I thought that, you know, they've addressed some. I mean, now their best receiver is going to be Allen Hurns. We'll see how good that's going to be. But overall, you know, I think that they've made some progress, but it's going to be a challenge because, I mean, Witten meant so much to every quarterback that's been there, particularly with Tony Romo. And he certainly helped out everything with Dak Prescott, but it's going to be a tough guy to replace.
253 wants to know, who had some of your favorite drafts?
I really liked Dallas's draft, Cleveland's draft, except for the, you know, having Ward at number four. I didn't like that as much, but I still give them good grades. Minnesota I thought was a little disappointing, so I didn't like them as much. I really liked Tampa Bay. You know, Tampa Bay finally getting big and strong on the defensive line. I like that draft a lot. And I don't know, it's like, did you like the New England draft? I mean, they kept on trading into next year's picks. I mean, they pick up three picks next year. I didn't like that draft as much.
No, but I usually don't. Somehow they pull it together. They definitely traded back and got a lot of late round picks. I really thought that combined with what they did in the offseason, the Titans did really well.
Mm-hmm. But they only had four picks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they got quality with those four
picks.
They
got Harold Landry and Rashawn Evans. They already added Malcolm Butler. I think their defense is going to be much upgraded.
Oh, yeah. No question. I think they've had a very, very good offseason. Indy was also a little bit...
had so many picks.
Oh, I know.
You would hope that some of them are going to pan out for them.
You would hope.
Like they were picking every three picks or so.
You heard their names a lot.
425 wants to know how you rate John Gruden's first draft.
Shaky. I mean, honestly, it's almost like an old Raider draft because, I mean, they took chances on so many players. I mean, Keys had off-the-field problems. You know that. I mean, they took a guy in the, third round, a defensive tackle that, you know, people were scratching their head because, again, he had some great workouts, but he didn't go to the combine. He wasn't invited to the combine. And, you know, but they had at least three times where they took chances, and they took a chance on Martavius Bryant for a third-round pick. Kind of going the old-school way, kind of, hey, let's take the troubled guy and see if he's going to be able to make it.
Yeah, and I don't even think people were very sold on Colton Miller, their first pick, the tackle out of UCLA.
That was the guy that Tom Cable talked him into.
Yeah, which we all are a little skeptical of how that goes.
I know.
So that's it for Text Today, Professor.
Okay, so you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we check in with Dave Crosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And Dave, you were able to spend about 3 hours over at the VMAC in the Seahawk Draft Lounge. What did you think? Did you enjoy it?
Always memorable, John.
Well, honestly, now, here it is. I mean, I know that drafts aren't the most exciting, but you did seem to be a little bit energized. You did seem to like it.
Well, Shaquem Griffin was a big story.
Yeah, he was.
That saved the day as far as I was concerned. It was a big story. It was fun hanging around with you guys, even though now comes the worst part of it, trying to evaluate whether it's a good draft or not when no one has any idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Criticizing people for making grades then saying you like the draft to me is hypocritical, so I won't do it.
Yeah, that's true. And because, again, just like they've had so many years, a bad grade on a Seahawk draft.
Yeah, what difference does it make? What if it's a good grade? What difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
They had their needs. They went after most of them, and we'll see if these guys work out or not.
Yeah. Well, the one that I think drives me the crazy is when they start to do, they redraft, like about...
Right.
And he's like, isn't that the silliest thing in the world? When they do the redrafts, you know, what they'll do is like the next year after the draft, they'll come back and they say, well, here's how we reviewed. And it's like all they basically do is take the guys who started, move them to the top, and the ones that make the Pro Bowl as rookies, they put them in there. And it's like that's such a silly waste of time.
Well, I agree with it. So in my opinion, is trying to evaluate a draft right after it's taken place. I mean, you know, you look at the undrafted free agents, which are a big part of the deal as well, and you're telling me that someone can actually evaluate this? I don't, except for the guys who did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it. So they went out and had the ultimate story of the draft in getting Griffin, who I think I don't know whether he's a value guy. I don't believe in that stuff. What I did believe in was the fact that he blew my mind watching him in that bowl game.
Yeah,
he was the best player on the field in a game against Auburn that Central Florida won. He looked every inch an NFL stud player, and I have no doubt that he's going to be that.
Yeah, and again, it's just a matter of now how long it's going to take. I thought it was intriguing that they're going to use him as a weak side linebacker because that's, you know, where you would normally put somebody because of his speed, because I thought maybe they'd put him on a strong side with like a Bruce Irvin type of mode. But I think probably wisely, it's just, you know, just put him out there and try to make plays. He'll be playing behind K.J. Wright, so there's no hurry in getting him on the field.
Well, and he'll play special teams, too, I would imagine, as well. So, right, there is no hurry to get him on the field, but I think he's going to be a guy who has an impact right away. Just struck me as a really good football player when I watched him in college.
Mm-hmm. No, and you really got to like what you see of him. And, again, just what dynamic do you think is going to cause in the locker room on a very positive
How could it be a negative one?
No,
you know what I mean? I mean, it just strikes me as that, if the Seahawks haven't said this, and a lot of people have speculated on it, but if you were looking to make a culture change, you've made one.
Mm-hmm.
You've made a significant one. You've gone from guys who, I'm not going to say were unhappy about being here, but guys who were unhappy, let's just put it that way, and
right.
Just stop at unhappy, to guys who are actually thrilled to be here. And you got one of the feel-good stories of the NFL now all of a sudden on your team. You got a completely different mindset, I think, on the team. And, you know, it's difficult look, I understand it's a rookie and a second-year guy. It's not necessarily team leaders. But it's definitely... It feels a lot more like the shot in the arm that the franchise could have used.
Right.
That we're kind of looking for free agency to provide that it really didn't. I feel like the drafting of Shaquem Griffin is going to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, I like it a lot. I think this is one where, because again, maybe it doesn't fit the conventional, but Seattle and the way that Pete Carroll and John Snyder put teams together doesn't fit the conventional. And that's why I think to be critical of it is probably going to be wrong.
At this point, for sure, of course, it's utterly wrong. Just like it is to praise it to the hilt is wrong. I mean, you know, we'll minicamp. The proof will come in September. You know, this is a draft that was important for this team because the team that's been slipping in the last couple of years. They didn't miss the playoffs by much last year, but they missed them by much. They lost, it looks like, probably up to about five or six starters on defense that are gone now. You've let a huge star in Jimmy Graham go as well. You got a rebuilding team, even though they don't like to use that word. And there's no reason why you can't rebuild immediately. We see Philadelphia did it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, what was their record before the Super Bowl last year, John?
I mean, what was it? What, 11-5?
No, that was last year's.
They were like 7-9.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL. It's not like a baseball 5-year rebuilding process. A rebuild can happen in a single season, and if this is a really good class, then it will. If it's not, then it's going to take a little bit longer. But that's true of every draft class.
Now, what I like is that they checked more boxes that they on the needs, and they tried to hit on them. I think they got good athletic speed. And then also they played to their theme. Their theme is they were trying to run the ball, and so they use a first-round pick on a talented running back who is hardly able to be stopped in college, and they got a blocking tight end, and it kind of fits what they're trying to do.
Yep, I agree with you. And most teams tend to do that. They tend to get what they need. You get enough guys, and in particular with not wanting people to look past the undrafted free agents. There's always a player or two that comes out of there for the Seahawks, mm-hmm. always. That's where they're uncanny at it, and they hit almost every position in that. A little thin on offensive line help, maybe. I mean, that seems to be the big criticism, and they drafted one offensive lineman, but you don't see any on the undrafted free agent list. That's a little bit of a surprise. But, let's hope they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and we'll start to get the first glimpse of that over the weekend with the rookie minicamp, which I know that you'll be there all 3 days.
Oh, I'm going to watch Shohei Ohtani pitch, John.
Oh, really?
I got no interest whatsoever in the rookie free agent camp.
Okay.
Well, that's going to be pitching? Proven.
What day is he pitching?
He's pitching against Felix this weekend. I think it's on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
I want to say.
That might be a big draw, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a chance there may be a few people.
A handful of people might want to see what this guy can do.
That's going to be kind of interesting to see. What's your thoughts on the Mariners and the winning 3 out of 4 in Cleveland?
Terrific start. I mean, a 7-3 road trip was an outstanding road trip. There's nothing to dislike at this point. They're hitting on all cylinders, and I guess just keep it up, keep it up. It's been very, very, very impressive, and that was a very impressive series in Cleveland. They really offensively had to get it done and did get it done. And I don't think anyone had any doubts how good their lineup was going to be, and you're seeing some guys pop out with particularly big seasons, and it was nice seeing Ryan Healy get into the mix yesterday with a couple of home runs as well. Great road trip for the Mariners, and one of their best months of April in about, I think we figured it out, in about 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think what it was 2009 and 2003 were the real good starts for this team. And then when you really think about it, it's like, okay.
That's, by the way, that's two good starts in the last 15 years.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that strange? But the weird part about it, I mean, you go even back to last year, and there were 9 games under .500 against Houston, and so they had a winning record against everybody else around the league.
Yeah, 73-70.
Yeah, and it's like, can that be the same thing this year?
Well, Houston took 3 out of 4 from them in the first game, but if they keep winning series against everyone else, it's not going to be as big a factor. They're not playing .500 ball against the rest of the league. They're playing, what are they, 15-10 overall now?
16-11.
16-11 overall. So take out the Houston games, and it's 15-8. They play that level away from Houston, they'll win 85-90 games.
Mm-hmm. No, it's kind of fun, and boy, can they hit! I mean, and this is the first time they've had the full lineup together.
Yeah, this weekend, this road trip was the first time, and that's that 24 games before they actually wheeled out their official starting lineup, and it's been very, very good. So their issue will be like every team's issue. They're not particularly deep, so bad injuries can cause a problem. But they've already withstood injuries to Nelson Cruz, who has shown his value whenever he's gone and whenever he comes back. They've already shown their ability to withstand some injuries in the lineup because it's so deep. Pitching staff is another story, so you got to keep your fingers crossed there a little bit. But so far, so good. Nothing not to like in the month of April for the Mariners.
No, I think that's the fun part about it. So what's on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
We'll be talking with your boy Brady Henderson of ESPN at about 2 o'clock.
Well, that'll be great. So Brady Henderson at 2. I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.